Greetings, Hoopsheads. Welcome to Locked On Warriors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. It's Friday, May 18th. I'm your host, Aliko Carter. So I went out last night and put my Juul down somewhere. Juul is a nicotine vaporizer. Do not start vaping because that shit will get you addicted. And I'm fiending right now because I put it down. Somebody must have picked it up and it's gone. So I would suggest to all my listeners out there, if you haven't started, don't start. Don't do it. You'll be better for it. Good show today. We're going to talk about the Dubs and the Rockets in Game 3 coming back to Oakland on Sunday, as well as a little bit about what we can expect from Celtics and Cavs in Cleveland on Saturday. You can grab this podcast on Spotify, iTunes, iOS, Google Play, and Locked On Warriors.com. Make sure you bookmark that page. Also, LockedOnNBA.com. You can find us on Facebook at Locked On Dubs and Twitter at Locked On Dubs. Find me on Twitter at Kogitare, Kogitare. You can catch my written work on Forbes.com, and you can find my credentials on LinkedIn. Just search Aliko Carter. That's A-L-I-K-O. Kind of weird not having basketball for such a long period of time. The finals are starting a little bit early this year, May 31st, but very uncharacteristic to have 4 days off for each team in between the second and third games. But it's great for the Warriors because, as I said in the last podcast, they got taxed. They needed the rest. The Hamptons 5 definitely needs the rest. They're going to be refreshed. They're going to be in Oakland, and it's going to be a new game. Coming home, I think Steph is going to have a better game. He has to have a better game. He has to play like an MVP. Obviously, the Warriors have two MVPs, but and Draymond is really amazing as far as doing everything that the Warriors need done defensively, etc., etc. Stephen Curry needs to score the ball. He needs to score more than 18 points. He needs to shoot the ball well for the Warriors to be victorious in Game 3, and he knows this. You know, like I said, he's going to be putting up shots. He's putting up shots right now. If he can combine some really potent three-point shooting with his already exceptional drives to the basket, scoring the ball, maybe get a few foul calls this time around, I think you'll see a different game. It's going to open everybody else up. Obviously, Steph has been assisting the ball very well. 8 assists, 7 assists, 6 assists, getting everybody involved. And that is super important, but we need Steph to be the guy he was 2 years ago. We need him to be the guy he was last year during the playoffs. We need him to be the guy that we saw this year before he got injured, who was scoring 27 points a game. On nearly 50-40-90 splits, I might add. I really don't think his knee and ankle are hampering him. There hasn't been any conversation about it, no chatter, nothing coming out of the Warriors' practices or anything like that. It's just taking a little bit longer than what we anticipated for Steph to shake the rust off. Basketball is a really hard game. Shooting the ball from 30 feet is very difficult. You're going to miss more than you make. Steph misses more than he makes. In his best season, he shot 45%. But we need him to be better than the 12.5%, 1 of 8, that he shot from 3 in Game 2. I'm looking for one of those 8 of 13 nights from 3. He just goes crazy. He's due. He's absolutely due. Obviously, being due for a big game doesn't really mean anything. He's either going to play well or he's not going to play well, but he's too good to play that poorly for that. And like I said, he's not playing poorly. He's just not shooting the ball well. He's too good of a shooter to continue to be that low percentage-wise. And, you know, I really think that there's a breakout coming. Klay Thompson, also, 3 of 11 in this game. Game 2, got to be better, got to take more shots. I'd rather see him be 3 of 15 than 3 of 11. Rather see him be 5 of 18, you know, or something like that. He needs to be active. He needs to be aggressive for the Warriors to keep the Houston defense honest. His mid-range game has grown so much. He can take people off the dribble, pull up, from about 15 feet. Even go to the cup. He's got some nice reverse actions going on. There's very few clay-ups in our lives anymore. And oh boy, do I not miss clay-ups. Clay-ups were the bane of my existence in 2012, 2013, even as late as 2014. But he's really gotten that together. He has touch around the rim. He's got to break that out. Break his whole arsenal out for game three. He's going to be at home. Klay is a guy who tends to play better at home. It's uncharted territory for the Warriors coming home and playing games 3 and 4 at Oracle rather than starting. That hasn't happened since the 2013-2014 season when the Warriors were knocked out of the first round by the Clippers in 7 games. If you'll recall, that was a series that Andrew Bogut was not able to play. And it was an exciting series. It was tough. It led to Mark Jackson's ouster, led to Steve Kerr's hire, and the rest is history. I don't think Steve Kerr's going anywhere anytime soon, but this definitely is kind of, it's a new situation. The Warriors are going to have to play extremely well at home. They didn't have a fantastic home record this year, but they haven't lost at home in the playoffs in a very long time. A very long time. I think you're going to see fewer turnovers. There were 15 turnovers in the last game, a little bit too many. Obviously, the magic number is 15. They tend to win many more games, averaging 15 or fewer, than 16 or more. But this was not their night. Wednesday, that is. They were just outplayed in every facet of the game. 127-105. That's a thumping. Only 7 fast break points for the Warriors in this game, well below their playoff average of nearly 18. And a lot of that was turnovers. They didn't have a chance to get out in transition because they were throwing the ball away. They didn't have a chance to get out in transition because they played poor defense, allowed the Houston Rockets to shoot 51% from the field. And it's tough. It's tough when the other team is making shots. You can't get out and run. You can't get them before their defense is set up. The Warriors striking early is extremely important, especially with the length of the Houston Rockets defenders giving the Warriors fits in the last game. We'll continue this conversation on the other side of this break. So we're talking Warriors, we're talking coming home. Home. It's a beautiful thing. I predicted the Warriors would win both games at Oracle. I don't think they're going to lose a game at Oracle. And if we do get past the Houston Rockets, home court advantage is ours in the finals. So it's a matter of taking care of business at home. Outscoring the Houston Rockets in the first quarter would be huge. The Rockets outscored the Warriors by 5 in that first quarter, then by 9 in the second. The Warriors did not win a quarter in game 2. One good stat from the Warriors, big stat. The Warriors had 50 points in the paint in this game. That is, I believe, the highest total that they've had in the playoffs so far. The Spurs, the Pelicans, routinely outscored the Warriors in the paint, and the Warriors made them pay from the three-point line, from the mid-range. But in this game, the Warriors attacked. They attacked the basket, and it was fruitful. To the tune of 50 points, but the rest of their shots were not falling. Those normal mid-range shots that Klay, KD, like to take, they weren't falling as much. KD, obviously, was amazing, but was a minus 28. And the three-point shot wasn't falling. We know that. They shot 9 of 30. That's 30%. If they shoot 13 of 30, they're in the game. And I really don't think it was a matter of the Houston Rockets playing better, closing out on shooters better. You give them a little bit of credit for that, but the Warriors missed a lot of open shots as well. Only 2 of Nick Young's shots fell, and I didn't talk about Nick Young yesterday. Nick Young, not very good defensively, got beat repeatedly off the dribble, but even so managed a 100.7 defensive rating, which is actually very good. I think being on the floor with Kevon Looney really helped that a lot, because Kevon Only played 11 minutes, but had a 98.9 defensive rating, which is very good. A lot of 90s sprinkled around in the offensive rating, though, which is not very good. That's 90 points per 100 possessions. Very, very poor. Kevon Looney, 91.6. Steph Curry, 95.4. Andre Iguodala, 95.9. Not good. Not good. That means their shots aren't falling when they're on the floor together. Means they're not creating points. And the Houston Rockets did a great job of creating scoring opportunities. They're a very, very potent team. You couldn't expect a guy like Trevor Ariza, for example, to play poorly two games in a row. The guy has a championship. He's been around a long time. He takes the game very seriously. And the same goes for all the guys on the Rockets. And more than that, the Warriors were just out-hustled in Game 2. Looking at these hustle stats, what we've become used to with the Warriors contesting shots, all this other kind of stuff, it just didn't happen in Game 2. Draymond once again comes in at the top, having contested 10 shots in Game 2, 5 two-point shots, 5 three-point shots, but we're used to Draymond closer to, you know, 16, 17, 18 contested shots. He did box out the Houston Rockets 23 times, which is a ton, and is 16 times more than anybody else on the roster. Kevon Looney with 7 box outs. Nobody had more than 7 contested shots besides Draymond. The Warriors contested 63 shots, but the Rockets shot the ball 88 times. That's 25 wide open shots. The Houston Rockets are going to knock those down. As I've said in the past, they have a number of above average three-point shooters. Nobody absolutely incendiary. Eric Gordon was 6-9 from 3 for 27 points. Didn't talk enough about Eric Gordon in the last podcast. He was 8-15 from the field, made all 5 of his 3 free throws, and was a pretty good hound on the defensive end. All right, I'm going to end this segment a little bit early so that we can go straight to talking about LeBron and the Celtics. Special treat. I've got Miles Johnson here, my good friend and roommate, and we're going to break down a bunch of stuff about Celtics seas, maybe touch on the Warriors as well. Quick break. All right, we've got Miles here. We're going to talk Celtics Cavs first off. And I'm super excited to have Miles here because he's been out of town and it's just always fun having him on the show. How you doing, man?
I'm good. I'm glad it's Friday.
Yes, always glad it's Friday. And we get some good basketball over the weekend. The break has been almost interminable. I don't understand this big ass like break between...
Well, you gotta travel. And yeah. I mean, I guess Houston has to go much farther than...
I guess that's true. The travel kind of, yeah, I don't know. Anyway, everybody played a lot of minutes, and so I'm happy they're getting the rest. But, you know, it's tough.
I, too, have wanted to watch basketball the last 2 nights.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. Anyway, so we're talking Celtics, Cavs, and we're talking LeBron, who had 21 points in the first quarter of the last game, game 2, 21 points the rest of the game. And one thing I have not talked about is the huge hit that LeBron took from Jason Tatum going to the basket. You know, that hit in slow motion was, it looked so, so, so painful. And he looked a little bit rattled afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, right after the hit, he looked a little dazed. I mean, he said that he's fine, and yeah, then he got tested for multiple things.
Yeah, he said he had a battery of... he didn't say a battery of tests. I'm paraphrasing there. I like the word battery.
No, he said he had been tested for multiple things and that he had passed them all, and that's why he had been cleared. He didn't specifically say that he had been cleared from anything related to a concussion, which a lot of people on Twitter suspected after the hit that he may have had. I mean, I don't know. Watching the game, he looked really different, markedly different from the first quarter where he put up 21. And again, it was the way he was putting up 21, too. It was even different from explosive first quarter that he would have had against Boston in, what, that was 2012?
Oh, yeah.
When he went off, I think, for 48, and didn't miss the first, like, 27, like, worth of points. This is, of course, when he played for the Heat, but the point being, he looked different, you know. In that first quarter, he was hitting, you know, fall-away, you know, step-back threes over Marcus Smart. And then in the third and fourth quarters, it wasn't even that he was just missing shots short, you know, something that can be a sign of fatigue, but missing almost a foot to the left or right of the basket on straightaway threes after he had, you know, looked so sharp in the opening quarters. I did wonder, you know, whether something more serious than a neck strain happened. Because the thing is, if the Cavs do have to put him in concussion protocol, if they have to initiate that process, this series is over.
Yeah.
This series is totally over. If LeBron James, if it comes out that he has a concussion, this is something that Bomani Jones tweeted a couple of days ago, like, if that comes out that he's concussed, the Cavs don't have to show up to the gym anymore, right? The Celtics will run them off the floor without LeBron. They have been running them off the floor with LeBron, right? And yeah, that Game 2 performance that he had, concussion or potential concussion or neck strain or whatever, or nothing, right? He put up more than 40, and they still lost by double digits.
Yeah.
If you take LeBron off, and it honestly does not even matter who you start in his place, like, they shouldn't even make Boston play those games. They should make them play that game 3. If he were to, you know, be out for game 3, which he's not, but hypothetically, if he were to miss game 3, go ahead and play that game 3. Don't make them have to come back for game 4, because it would be pointless.
Yeah. Yeah, this Cavs team, not very good. And we know two things. We know LeBron took a really, really hard hit. And we know, I think we can surmise that he did not go through concussion protocol. What he gave was a non-answer, you know?
Yeah, I don't know enough about the process and what he was tested for. I haven't personally read the sort of breakdown of what he was tested for. I don't know if you've seen anything about that. But,
no, I haven't.
I don't know. I don't want to get, like, into, you know, speculating and, like, diagnosing people. I think it is, it poses an interesting conundrum, potentially, because there is no incentive for Cleveland to prod into this, right? Like, there's no incentive for them, Cleveland, the organization, right? Unless you believe that they care about LeBron James's mental health, like, as an individual.
Yeah.
There's no incentive for them to, like, really dig into this, because if it does come out that he has to go through concussion protocol, the series is over, right? Yeah. So then you start to get into kind of this murky territory where you, like, how much can we trust some of the more rigid rules and guidelines that the NBA imposes? Things like, you know, this is what happens if a player sustains a head injury and you mm-hmm. suspect that a concussion may have, you know, happened. This is what has to happen. Maybe, right? Because, and I don't even think it's something that's unique to Cleveland. I mean, the question that I posed to you before is, if Houston wins both of those home games and Kevin Durant had sustained a similar injury, I don't know. Do the Warriors right now, with the way that Steph has been playing, the way that Klay came out in game 2, do they go ahead and put Durant through concussion protocol and hope for the best if they're not tied 1-1 coming back to Oracle? Yeah.
Like, my answer was, I don't know, you know. That is a really, really tough question.
But it shouldn't be, right? Like, the thing is, like, if this rule is fulfilling its intent, it's sort of its intended purpose, it is about player health and player safety, right? The fact that we can sit here and be like, I don't really know if this would actually happen, despite the fact that it is a really strictly mandated process that is at the root to protect people's, you know, brains. Like, this is a real, these are head injuries.
Well, let me go further. I think that Steve Kerr cares about his players. And
I'm sure
if
that
the
does.
Decision was up to him, KD would go through concussion protocol. That's what I feel. But whose decision is it?
Look, I don't know. I don't even know how the decision necessarily would take place, because I don't know if this is something that unilaterally a player would decide, or If there has to be input from coaches and medical and training staff, and I'm not sure if, you know...
Is it meant... It's kind of meant to be that nebulous. I mean, it kind of allows for a situation like this with LeBron, where, you know, you don't even know. Where you don't even know, because the rule is not, like you said, not rigid. It doesn't feel like a rule as much as it is a guideline.
No, but it is. It's. I mean, I think, like, it's incredibly clear, right? Like, if a player, like, sustains an injury that you think may be concussive, like, this is the protocol, right? The fact that people just don't do that, I don't think necessarily speaks to the ambiguity of the guideline or the ambiguity of the rule. I just think you reach a point where, you know, how valuable to your team, how valuable to the economic success of both the organization and the people who are working within it, do you have to be before things like whether you are concussed or not maybe don't factor in as much, right?
Yeah, like,
and
you, like
I don't
you
know
said
Steve
before.
Kerr personally, right? So you could... There are lots of people, I'm sure, that would say, oh, yeah, we really care about these players, right? But there are literally hundreds of millions of dollars on the line.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So...
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, like...
Yeah, we were talking about this, and we were talking about, like, you know, if JR gets the same hit,
he's going through concussion protocol.
He's going through concussion protocol. But LeBron is exempt, maybe.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, again, this is... I'm not saying that he does have a concussion. I'm just saying if he did, even if he did, right? If Tatum comes through and that hit happens and LeBron is definitely concussed, we would never know.
Yeah.
Right? Because Cleveland would never tell us. And I'm not sure...
They have no incentive to.
Other than, again... Like, doing the right thing.
Right? Yeah.
And I think that's where you
Dan
realize...
Dan Gilbert and doing the right thing aren't really synonymous.
But again, like, I even hesitate to say, as much as I personally think Dan Gilbert is maybe not the nicest person in the world, I really do hesitate to even say that this is unique to him or even, like, owners like him. Like, I don't know, right?
Yeah.
Like, we can, you know, think
Joe Lacob, history of hiding injuries... there was an injury with Andrew Bogut where we traded for Andrew Bogut back in 2012, and they didn't tell us that he had microfracture surgery. We found out much later that he had had microfracture surgery on his foot or something like that. And so I don't know. It's not out of the realm of possibility.
And it's not like this season especially has been any stranger to really clandestine, secretive health issues, ranging from Kawhi and the Spurs to Markelle Fultz and the Sixers. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like this is, you know, this conspiracy theory that, like, I've made up. I think you know, you can identify where kind of the rubber meets the road and where, you know, there is a situation where the interests of the player and, like, the interests of the team, you can see, like, are directly at odds with one another.
Yeah.
Right? Because if LeBron is concussed, I'm not saying he is, so I'm not trying to, you know
stir the pot.
Yeah, I'm really not. But if he was, he should go through concussion, because it's a head injury. It's really serious. It's not really like, serious. You know, a foot injury or a knee injury, which are, again, also serious. But, like, we're talking about your ability to function, like, as a person moving forward, basketball or no basketball, right?
Much less a basketball.
You should
player,
take care of your brain the absolute best way you can, right?
You only got one, and degenerative diseases are real.
But if he does do that, right, the Cavs can pack it up and go home. And I'm not sure which one Dan Gilbert would be more willing to do. I'm not sure which one any owner with a player like LeBron, with a player like Durant or Steph Curry, right, or Russell Westbrook. I don't know what any of these owners with these organizations would do.
Yeah. We know the almighty dollar is almighty, and that's about all we know. And that's about as much time as I have for today. Thanks for tuning in. And enjoy the basketball over the weekend. Should be fantastic. Thanks, Miles, for joining. Thank you. Stay thoughtful, Hoopsheads.